Accession number 30267, Reel 2.
By the Reebok Zoo. Aircrew. ACRC, they used to call it, or RC-TARC. And I went there on the 9th of September 41. And I left there on the 30th. We went to number 8, ITW Nuki. But whilst I was there, it was quite interesting, because we used to have to walk from our digs right the way through into the park and have our meals at the zoo, the restaurant in the zoo. And I decided that as we walked, I would say, Didar A, Didar A, Didar A. By the time I got there, I knew what A was, and it was Didar. And by this way, before I actually went to ITW, I'd learnt the Morse code. So that paid me in good stead. And at ITW,
this was at Newquay.
At Newquay.
Yes.
I shared a room with a chap called Ralph, Jack Ralph, a Welshman, black as the ace of spades, his hair. And I used to call him, quite frankly, in very friendly terms, I used to call him a black bee. And he used to call me a cockney something else. But we got on extremely well. But he'd been at very well educated at high school and possibly college. And he taught me a lot whilst we worked and swatted together. And the interesting part was that after I went to... there was one big achievement I made at ITW, and that was I scored 195 out of 200 on navigation. Don't ask me how I did it, but I could visualize if the wind is coming from here and etc., etc. I could visualize it without really working it out, and it made sense to me. I studied hard, and very amused at the fact that everybody thought my Morse code was better than theirs. And two friends of mine, when had a test from the oldest lamp, that was shone from the island off of Newquay, I called out the letter sufficiently for them to hear. And when the marks came out, I'd got 95 and they'd got 100%. So Lord knows what went wrong, but anyway, well, it wasn't all that serious.
That initial course, what was it like, Joe?
Very good. It was perfect for me. It bored Jack Ralph and many of the others who'd just come from school. But they taught you everything you had to know, right from scratch. So they assumed you knew nothing at all, and this was great because I'd left school so early. But of course, chaps who were well up in their algebra, etc., etc., and trigonometry, they thought it was an awful bore. But I found it was what I needed, and they were very good. There were three interesting things that happened to me down there. One was, I'd had a haircut that afternoon, and we had a pilot officer, penguin, as we used to call them. If they didn't have wings, they were penguins. And he was very officious, and he'd walk behind a line and tap me on the shoulder, haircut. And I bridled at this, and I said I would like to see the commanding officer on a redress of grievance, because I'd only had a haircut that afternoon. So, and I always remember Wing Commander Wheatley. He was a very nice, our CO was a great chap. He was a stock exchange man, and we got along extremely well. And I went in front of him, and he turned around and said, "Well, this was two days later." He said, "Well, perhaps a trim." So honor was satisfied, and I'd got away with it. And he had he was a keen golfer, and he arranged a golf thing up at the links. Now I got to know the daughters of the chap who operated the links golf course. There were two daughters there. And I and a friend of mine, Jack Ralph, were invited to have Christmas dinner with them. A lot of the families did this in Newquay. They were very, very kind. And anyway, they had this golf tour, and I've never played golf. I made an atrocious score, but at the same time, it was a better score than the other team played. And he said, "What on earth? This is not a golf score. This is the mathematical." But he said, "Well, if that was the best score, I have to give you the prize." And he sort of did. Then we were invited to talk, to debate, and I used to like debating. I'd like defending something I didn't believe in. I would always go on to the opposite side, and there was I remember the one of the discussions was, "It's man a born killer," and I know that I argued for the wrong side, if you like. But then we were always invited to give talks, so I decided to give a talk, and the CO was there. And I gave a talk of the similarities between dog racing and the dog track and the stock exchange. It was all very tongue-in-cheek, but anyway, I gave this, and Wing Commander Wheatley, who was in the audience, came up afterwards and had to then point out very, very different, very sort of differences. But quite frankly, when I came back to London, and I met Wheatley, and he took me round the stock exchange, which was many years later. And quite frankly, I think it's a very similar situation to the dog track without the enjoyment of the actual race. But anyway. Bill Wheatley, who was a very nice Wing Commander, and the next time I met him, we were both squandering. Right, so anyway, I got sent to Canada.
That would have been... Did you not go to elementary flying school first?
No.
Would that have been... right?
No, we did... We went to Booker, which was... You had a couple of sort of hours... familiarisation, but it wasn't a training course as such. I went to after Newquay. We went, of course, to Booker, and then to Air Crew Departure Centre, Manchester, and then I went on the USS George Elliot from Greenock to number 5 Manning Depot in Montreal. And in Montreal, extraordinary thing happened to me. I was told to report to the orderly room, and when I got to the orderly room, I was then told to go and collect my gear for 2 weeks and report back to the orderly room. I wondered what on earth had happened. Had I done something wrong? Had I? However, I did as I was told. And then, whilst I was sitting in the ordinary room, a gentleman walked in and was shown straight into the commanding officer's office. And after a moment of whether, I was sent for. And I was introduced to a Mr. Tom, T-H-O-M. And the CO said, patient, you are to go as a guest of Mr. Tom for 2 weeks. I wondered why on earth I'd been selected as a guest for Mr. Tom. However, all the other students were looking aghast at me going into a chauffeured car, very, very, very good car, with a gentleman sitting in the back on my way out. Well, when we got to this gentleman's home, I said, well, sir, I don't really understand this. He said, you will in about 2 minutes' time, Joe. He said, I may call you Joe. I said, of course, sir. And we went in, and then it became obvious, because the professor of music at McGill's University, a chap called Douglas Clark, knew me from the Arts Club in London. And for some reason or other, he had found out that I had come to Canada, and he felt that Mr. Tom, who happened to be a director of the McGill University, had more pull, if you like, than he had of getting me released from the rib. So he, with a party of other students from McGill University, Douglas Clark took myself and a part of the others up into the Laurentian Mountains for 2 weeks' holiday for skiing, or at least for a week's holiday, and then we spent a week in Montreal. I had my leg pulled as being the limey with these Canadians. And everything was the limey's chicken. I'd never been on ice skates, so I was afraid. But I wasn't afraid of the ice skating. I was afraid I might twist my ankle and therefore put me out of the running for flying. So I took it very, 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 very gently. And then, of course, I was shown round Montreal by the daughter of, there was a son and daughter who was at home at that time, and Bunty, her name was. She was just a little younger than I, and I actually went over to Canada to her 80th birthday and spent it with her children and grandchildren, which was rather nice. So of course I'd never met such hospitality in my life as I met with this Tom family. They took me everywhere, and I thoroughly enjoyed my stay with them, so much so that when I wrote my book, I insisted that there was mention not only of their kindness, but a photograph of the mother and father, and of course of Bunty also, which I inserted in the book, which was cut out when it was sent to be audited, I think was the word. Concentrated, they said, but what they did is they castrated it, and it was given to a lady who's a friend of mine now, Angela, who married my oldest friend John Diamond, and it was given to her to condense. She didn't condense it. She made numerous alterations to my words, and although no doubt it was better English in that sense, it wasn't me. And one of the things that she changed was I had been promoted, so I wrote that I was now able to marry my sweetheart Lucy. And she had changed it to my horror. I was now able to marry my girlfriend Lucy. Well, in those days, to me, you might sleep with your girlfriend, but you married your sweetheart. And so, of course, I had to go through this book and I had to change back 200 words that she had changed. And I also had to insist that 9,000 words that she'd cut out as being either too obscene or detrimental or whatever reason she cut it out, had to be put back. Otherwise, people who knew Joe Patient and read his book would have laughed if I'd have left it in the state that she wanted it published. So anyway, finished up like that. And I went back then after 2 weeks, wonderful weeks in Montreal and in the Laurentian Mountains. And the only other connection I had with the Tom family was when I finished training and went back and called in on them. And I was, because I had then graduated as honor student, Mr. Tom said that I care to come back to Canada, he could get me direct entry to McGill University. However, that wasn't to be. I was then sent to Prince Albert on my elementary flying training school. Now, flying training came to me as a duck to water. It was to me a piece of cake. I found everything very easy, and it was only the technical studies that I found difficult. Flying I found very, very easy. Prior to leaving England, I bought myself a book which was Teach Yourself to... There was a Teach Yourself series at that time. Teach Yourself Mathematics, Teach Yourself French, Teach This, That and the Other, Algebra and what have you, and it had a Teach Yourself to Fly, 2 shillings and 6 pence. And I bought this and took it to Canada with me. And it had one manoeuvre in it which I thought was the loveliest aerobatic manoeuvre ever carried out, and that is the stall turn. So having been sent solo, and then to go, you were sent out to an area to practice spins and recovery. And I thought, well, I'll climb another 1,000 feet, play safe. I climbed another 1,000 feet, and this book said, then you put the nose of the aircraft into a dive and you pull back the stick until the aircraft comes climb vertical, and then you should rotate. What they failed to tell me is that I should have applied rudder before I stalled, so I then had no impetus to turn to rotate me, with the result I sat there and whoosh, came back, the aircraft just fell out back, the stick hit me in the tummy and then fell out of my hands, and I went into a ginormous spin. Anyway, you were taught spin recovery. I got out of that spin, and I must admit I was a bit shaky, more than a bit shaky, and I just stooged around. I didn't do any more spins or anything else. I stooged down gently till my time was up, and I went back, and I believe I made the best landing I've ever made in my life, because I fully expected things to fall off the aircraft as I landed. But so I never tried any other aerobat or any other manoeuvre unless I had first shown it by an instructor.
What planes were you flying?
Tiger Moth.
What did you think of the Tiger Moth?
A wonderful aeroplane.
What was good about it? tiger mum?
It didn't have any vices. If it was simple to fly. It was fully aerobatic. You could land it in a short area. In fact, so much so that I even had one of my own many, many years later. The course was 3.5 months EFTS, and I did not leave the camp once. Except the night before the exams, I was literally ordered out of the camp. Most of the other chaps used to go out or quite frequently and enjoy the fun of the town or whatever at Prince Albert, but no, I was scared of failing. Being the youngest of a family, to go back having been a failure to my brothers, that's something I could not face. And so I studied and I studied and I studied, and it so much so that it paid off. The biggest surprise I had of my life was when I graduated honor student in a class of 35. There were a dozen chaps there who could easily have beaten me had they applied themselves with half the tenacity that I myself showed. But it paid off. They had a big parade, and Air Commodore Bonham Carter came, presented me with a watch. Photographs were taken and sent back to my wife in England, and a very big thing was made that I graduated, the first Englishman to graduate as honor student in Prince Albert, with my name suitably engraved on their trophy, etc., etc. So one has proof of the thing.
Would this be the Len Waite Trophy?
Len Waite Trophy, that was what it was called, yeah. He was the chief flying instructor at that. The flying instructors were civilians at the FTS, and a great bunch of chaps they were. The Americans and the Canadians did something that the British never did. On their courses, they had a little at the end they had a rhyme or a doggerel, call it what you like, about everybody in the course. How they managed to find out anything about it, I do not know. But in my case, it was Patient J stole a march one day, for first once solo was he. Cheery and bright, he does everything right, a dashing young pilot will be. Absolute nonsense, but that's the sort of thing they did. And we had also, they had a doggerel at the SFTS. This time was J, P as in patient, so misleadingly named, proud of old England and lion untamed, sure of himself with glory in sight, here's to wish him that all will go right. That was the SFTY.
Oh, they're lovely. Thank you very much, Joe, for those.